Welcome to Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, an award-winning, listener-supported, open-source grassroots and partially solar-powered community radio station broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield. Please note that these presentations are provided as a public service for general information purposes only and are not intended to be legal opinions, legal advice, or complete discussions of any legal issues. Remember, every individual's factual situation is different, and you should seek independent legal advice from an attorney familiar with the laws of your state or locality regarding specific information. The name of this show is Life and Debt, and it is a weekly half-hour educational show looking at all types of issues related to debt as it influences your life. This show provides practical, general knowledge about what to look for regarding debt, what are traps and pitfalls, and what to do to be an educated debtor. It's useful to get some notebook, paper, and pen so you can take notes during the show. We start by looking at some debt-related news and facts for the week. From the New York Times, an article by David Streitfeld and Gretchen Morganson, Foreclosure Furor Rises, Many Call for a Freeze. The uproar over bad conduct by mortgage lenders intensified last week as lawmakers in Washington requested a federal investigation and the Attorney General in Texas joined a chorus of state law enforcement figures calling for freezes on all foreclosures. Representative Nancy Pelosi, the House Speaker, and 30 other Democratic representatives from California told the Justice Department, the Federal Reserve, and the Comptroller of Currency that it is time that banks are held accountable for their practices. In a request for an investigation into questionable foreclosure practices by lenders, the lawmakers said that the excuses we have heard from financial institutions are simply not credible. Officials from the federal agencies declined to comment. Texas Attorney General Greg Abbott, a Republican, sent letters to 30 lenders demanding they stop foreclosures, evictions, and the sale of foreclosed properties until they could provide assurances that they were proceeding legally. Both developments indicated that scarcely 2 weeks after the country's fourth biggest lender, GMAC Mortgage, revealed that it was suspending all foreclosures in the 23 states where the process requires judicial approval, concerns about flawed foreclosures had mushroomed into a nationwide problem. Some of the finger-pointing was also being directed back at Congress. The Ohio Secretary of State, Jennifer Bruner, suggested in a telephone interview that a bill passed by Congress last week about notarizations could facilitate foreclosure fraud. Dubious notary practices used by banks to justify foreclosures have come under scrutiny in recent weeks as GMAC and other top lenders suspended homeowner evictions over possible improper procedures. Ms. Bruner, who has recently referred possible cases of notary fraud in her state to federal authorities, worries that the legislation would allow the lowest standard for notaries to become a nationwide practice. She says she also worried that the changes were coming in the middle of a foreclosure storm where people could lose their homes improperly. A notary's signature is that of a trusted, impartial third party whose notarization bolsters the integrity of the document, Ms. Bruner said. To take away the safeguards of notarization means foreclosure procedures could be more susceptible to fraud. As banks' foreclosure practices have come under the microscope, problems with notarizations on mortgage assignments have emerged. These documents transfer the ownership of the underlying note from one institution to another and are required for foreclosures to proceed. In some cases, the notarizations predated the preparation of the legal documents, suggesting that signatures were not reviewed by a notary. Other notarizations took place in offices far away from where the documents were signed, indicating that the notaries might not have witnessed the signings as the law required. Notary practices vary from state to state, and the bill, sponsored by Representative Robert B. Alderholt, a Republican from Alabama, would require essentially that one state's rules be accepted by others. If one state allows its notaries to sign off on electronic signatures, for example, documents carrying such signatures and notarized by officials in that state would have to be recognized and accepted in any state or federal court. Ms. Bruner pointed out that some states have adopted electronic notarization laws that ignored the requirement of a signer's personal appearance before a notary. Many of these policies for electronic notarization are driven by technology rather than by principle, and they are dangerous to consumers, she said. Mr. Alderholt had introduced the bill twice before, and both times it passed the House of Representatives, but not the Senate. Mr. Alderholt reintroduced the bill last October, and it passed the Senate on September 29th. It is awaiting President Obama's signature. Mr. Alderholt's press secretary, Daryl Jordan, said there was no connection between the timing of the bill and the current notarization problems with foreclosures. In a statement announcing the bill's passage, Mr. Alderholt said this legislation will help businesses around the nation by eliminating the confusion which arises when states refuse to acknowledge the integrity of documents notarized out of state. J.P. Morgan Chase and Bank of America joined GMAC in suspending foreclosures recently in the states where they must be approved by a judge. The judicial states do not include California or Texas, but Mr. Abbott, the Texas Attorney General, told lenders in a letter drafted last week that if they used so-called robo-signers, employees who signed thousands of foreclosure affidavits a month, falsely attesting that they had reviewed the material, it would be a violation of Texas law. As a result, he wrote, the document and therefore the foreclosure sale would have been invalid. The three lenders who are at the center of the controversy, GMAC Mortgage, J.P. Morgan Chase, and Bank of America, declined to comment. Other lenders singled out by Mr. Abbott include Wells Fargo, City Mortgage, HSBC, and National City. Meanwhile, shares of a major foreclosure outsourcing company, Lender Processing Services of Jacksonville, Florida, fell 5% last week, adding to the slide that began recently. The company's documentation practices are stirring questions, including how the same employee can have wildly varying signatures on mortgage documents. LPS blamed a mid-level manager's decision to allow employees to sign forms in the name of an authorized employee. It says it has stopped the practice. The United States Attorney General's office in Tampa began investigating LPS in February. An LPS representative could not be reached for comment. Other calls for investigations came from Senators Al Franken, a Democrat from Minnesota, and Robert Menendez, a Democrat from New Jersey. And that's all from an article in the New York Times. If you are just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP, 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. I'd like to continue with the second article about the recent foreclosure revelations from Money News, because it gives some insight into what people may be facing in a positive light regarding the foreclosure crisis that can personally attack them. The name of the article is Homeowners May Gain Ground in Foreclosure Fights. Feeling the weight of mortgages on two properties and several thousand dollars of credit card debt, Jason and Kristen Coons filed for bankruptcy last year. The couple surrendered one property to foreclosure, but say they were still making payments for their house in Mishawaka, Indiana. Everhome Mortgage Company filed a claim on the three-bedroom ranch to ensure its right in the bankruptcy proceedings. But the validity of a key document that Everhome used to back up its claim has now been called into question, throwing the status of the Kunz's mortgage, like thousands of others around the United States, into uncertainty. Our goal is to pay the mortgage, Jason Kunz, a branch manager at a credit union, said in an interview. His lawyer is assessing next steps after a bankruptcy judge last week said Everhome is not entitled to a fast judgment in its favor because of faulty paperwork. Revelations that lenders used so-called robo-signers, who signed foreclosure orders but did not actually read them, could give borrowers leverage to seek loan modifications rather than lose their homes. The problems could put new pressure on the already shaky housing market, still clogged with homeowners at risk of default after the real estate bust. Bank of America Corp. said last week that it was going to extend a moratorium on foreclosures and sales of foreclosed properties in all 50 U.S. states while it reviews its practices. Two other big lenders, Ally Financial Unit, GMAC, and J.P. Morgan Chase & Company, have halted evictions or foreclosures in 23 states. State and federal officials are investigating the situation. In cases where document problems are easily fixed, banks can refile paperwork without derailing a foreclosure. But when the validity of mortgage documents is called into question, as in the Kunz's situation, lenders could be left without legal recourse to collect on the property. It is unclear how many of the thousands of cases fall into each basket. Banks say the problems are merely technical. Faced with the prospect of costly litigation or losing the right to collect full payment on a mortgage, lenders are more willing to explore deals with borrowers, said Judith Fox, a Notre Dame Law School professor who also represents borrowers. There is more of an incentive to settle, she said. When contacted, lenders would not comment on whether the document problems would lead to more loan modifications. An Ally spokeswoman, Gina Proia, said only that initiating the foreclosure process is a serious matter and only pursued when all other home preservation options have been exhausted. But I'd like to go into an aside with that comment because, in my personal experience, it is quite the opposite. I'll just give you a very concrete example of a client who filed a Chapter 7 bankruptcy. And on the day she filed, she made an electronic payment of her mortgage. The payment was accepted without any notice from the bank, which is J.P. Morgan Chase. Now, that was at the beginning of August. At the end of the month, she went to make another payment for the next month, but was told by the bank that they would not accept an electronic payment and that they had to speak to their lawyer. Of course, I was her lawyer, so I made the call to J.P. Morgan Chase. They actually gave me no information other than I needed to call the law firm that the case had already been given out to. So I tried calling the law firm several times, and it turns out that I was just getting voicemail of paralegals for several days. Finally, I was able to get through to the attorney handling the case, and I was told that the client had missed one payment prior to the filing of bankruptcy, which, by the way, no one indicated to her, but also now it was past September 1st, and so she was 2 months behind and needed to pay that immediately. I was also assured that, in effect, there was no movement towards a foreclosure at that time from a paralegal that I was eventually able to speak to. My client was getting paid on a
bi-weekly salary. And so she had the ability to pay for both of the mortgage payments. However, October 1st was fast approaching, and she would not be able to pay that one on time. In other words, she had to make two payments immediately and then the third one, but it would be late by about 2 weeks. I communicated this to the law firm, and frankly, I received no response allowing that kind of latitude under the circumstances. So what happened was, what my client feared, the law firm did take steps to remove the case from bankruptcy. That's called a motion for relief from the stay, which prevents them from filing a foreclosure. So this was contrary to what I was assured, but it also triggered another fact. It cost $150 to file the motion for the filing fee, and this law firm typically charges $700 for the motion. So now my client was not 3 months behind, two of which she had and one of which she would have in 2 weeks, but she effectively was 4 months behind because the $850 was about the same as her mortgage payment. Of course, initially my client was in a panic. There was no possible way that she could come up with four payments on the mortgage and the associated costs. And of course, once the bank files the foreclosure, there will be another $1,000 to $1,500 added in foreclosure fees that she would have to pay. Despite an attempt on my part to have the law firm make a stipulation so that my client could pay the arrears and get current over a little bit longer period of time, including the cost for the motion,
the law firm did not respond to that request.
The motion was still granted, and my client is now facing a foreclosure. This kind of shocked me because it totally contradicts this kind of spin that I just talked about from the Alley spokeswoman, Gina Proia, who said that initiating the foreclosure process is a serious matter and only pursued when all other home preservation options have been exhausted. Once the law firms get involved on behalf of the banks, the 1 month or 2 months or even 3 month arrearages escalates beyond repair, other than in a long-term Chapter 13 proceeding, which at this point for my client was not a beneficial choice. So we'll talk about this again in a minute. If you are just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. So I just gave a real-life example of how these companies are not bending over backwards to try to avoid the foreclosure. And this was a situation that could have very easily been caught up if the client was just given, first of all the facts, and just a little bit more time to catch up. Once, however, these legal fees start being factored into the equation, it is often very difficult, if not impossible, for the client to reasonably catch up. And when you look at it, it makes no sense for the bank, which is now going to have to contend with a foreclosure in a depleted, depressed, and very volatile market when they try to sell that house later. But those legal fees that foreclosure mills are churning have to be paid. So that's actually money out of the bank's pockets. But let me add even another layer to this whole incomprehensible and quite non-financially sound response from the bank. My client lives in the state of Iowa. Now, she has not paid her mortgage for 3 going on 4 months. The bank is going to have to pay the law firm for the motion, which will be $850 out of the bank's pocketbook. And they will pay the law firm to now file a foreclosure. Iowa is unique with foreclosures. There are judicial foreclosures, and for the most part, in order to expedite the process, the bank, through the lawyer's pleadings, will waive any deficiency under the note. In other words, if they are owed, let's say, $100,000 on the mortgage, but they can only sell the house for $50,000 or $60,000, whatever it is, plus the cost, that deficiency is waived. So the bank could get the house back more quickly. Now, these law firms are very busy, and we're having this whole crisis happening with the pleadings, the documents, and all of these challenges that I discussed earlier. And so the banks themselves are delaying these foreclosures, and Chase is one of those banks. So now weeks have gone by, and we have not yet seen a foreclosure. But eventually, one will come. So let's say it's at 5 months into the arrears. In other words, my client is living in that property without paying any mortgage for 5 months. Once the foreclosure is filed, it has to be served on my client. And once served, she gets 20 days to respond or answer that petition, which she will. The short of it is another month will have gone by before it's even back before the court. So that's, let's say, 6 months or possibly even 7 months of living there without paying the mortgage. Also, Iowa has a very precious body of law for the homestead. This woman lives in this house with her family, and it has a quality to it that is known as the homestead, which in some respects is quite protected in Iowa. What my client will do besides answering the petition, she will file what is known as a demand for the delay of sale. That means that once a judgment comes through, which it may at some point in the future, that judgment day becomes the starting point for 6 months of delay before the sheriff can sell the house. Now let's jump back for a minute. The foreclosure came, she received the service of the papers, she responded to it within 20 days. She basically will say what's going on, let's look at the documents, are these all legit? Considering everything that has been happening from these companies like JP Morgan Chase, the court will then order a hearing, usually based on the bank's motion for a summary judgment, saying that everything the bank has said is true and everything that has been denied is not really of importance. Now, the state of Iowa, like all states, are having some challenges financially in the judicial system, and there are a lot of cases, including foreclosures. So even the judge being able to schedule and have a hearing could take some time, let's say a month, let's say 6 weeks, let's say 2 months. So now in what is turning out to be a real situation, not a hypothetical, my client, before that motion will be heard, is probably going to have lived in the house for 8 or 9 months without paying the mortgage. Now, let's presume that Chase did everything properly and this law firm had all the documents properly to get that motion for a summary judgment granted. Fantastic. So now 8 or 9 months have gone by, and the clock starts ticking on that judgment date for another 6 months before my client is forced to leave her premises because of a sheriff's sale, which, by the way, in the current economy usually means that the bank is just going to take the house back. nobody's going to buy it.
And also, the sheriff's sale doesn't happen precisely after 6 months. There's some time delay usually.
But as we also pointed out from these news articles today, it could be that something was wrong with the paperwork. And the courts may, from its own side, sua sponte, look at these things and say, you have to go back and make some changes here, or you have to get this documentation straightened out, or you have to start all over again with a new case because this is not going to work until you can redo it correctly. That in the past was not a typical thing, but the judicial awareness to all of these problems, plus the bank's own recognition of what it did wrong across the board, may, in this particular case, for example, cause some more headaches for the bank, which means delay. But just doing our simple math, at a minimum, we are looking at probably 12 to 15 months of being able to have the client stay in the house without having paid any mortgage. What that turns out to be is $10,000 to $14,000 worth of no mortgage payments. That, of course, ultimately the bank, and probably more accurately the investors, will have to eat. They are going to take that as a loss. That does not include the legal fees here, or the late fees, or the insurance, or the real estate taxes that the bank is going to have to provide for. So what started out as a very simple situation, a scenario that could have been easily corrected, amended, and healed, the bank, through its representative, a law firm, moved ahead and basically shot itself in the foot financially, if in fact it is the owner of the mortgage. Now, of course, it may just be the servicer. I've not gotten into that in this particular case, and it could be churning fees for itself, even though the investors are losing down line. That's a whole other can of worms that we may go into at some other time. But the long and the short of it is loss out of stupidity or greed. And yet, in a very peculiar way, once I explain this to my client will gain tremendously. She actually has the money to pay the mortgage every month. And her plan was to sell the house in 2 years when her daughter finished high school because it was too much for her. But we also discussed how that could have been a challenge for her if that house did not sell, even if she was able to catch up at this time in the bankruptcy period. And one last point, even if the bank decided to not waive the deficiency, then we're looking at a year before the client would have to move out of the house. Now, all of this may seem complicated from the various legal tracks involved, and yet for my client here, she will frankly have made out financially by letting the house go into foreclosure, which originally she did not want to do. In fact, she was in tears over the prospect. But once it became inevitable that she could not catch up due to the added attorney's fees involved in the case, and then she saw the financial benefit of letting the foreclosure take place and further not losing down line in 2 years when she tried to sell the house in a very deflated market, she essentially walked away with feeling that the bank brought all of this on itself. And in the long run, it is a benefit to her. So foreclosing on the house is not always a wise idea. And we will get back to this article next week. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you have been listening to Life in Debt, your debt education program. If you have any questions or comments, call the station at 641-209-1083, or you can email me at lifeanddebt@